Lowe's knows how to help you save this 4th of July. Upgrade your laundry routine with the new and exclusive first-of-its-kind all-in-one vented laundry combo. Wash and dry in just 68 minutes. Save up to 40% on select major appliances. Plus, when you buy more, you save more. Shop Samsung this July 4th at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long-term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here. There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long-term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The bridge guy, that's been a big piece of the Delphi murder case against Richard Allen from the beginning, despite it doesn't really look like Richard Allen at all, but it's been presented in a very ominous way, all of this time, in a way where we hear and see on the screen this bridge guy ominously saying, down the hill, while he is behind the girls on the bridge. The reality is, that never happened. He didn't say that ominously behind the girls as he was walking along the bridge. No, he actually said it in passing as the girls had already talked about wanting to go down the hill. This is a crazy, crazy video. Now we've seen it in its entirety. I know you saw it in court, Bob. They played the whole thing, correct, in court?
They did.
Okay, so that at least was there. But leading up to this, all we saw was this 6-second edited version that was played over and over and over. And they said, this is the bridge guy's the killer. I got questions about how we even came to that conclusion, too. Before we dive into it, let's play the Bridge Guy video in its entirety, and then we will discuss. We're going to put it down over here to a full screen, and let's watch it. Here we go. And listen. So there's the girl on the bridge. There's Bridge Guy way back.
See, this is the path that we're on. There's no path going there, so we have to go down here.
Guys.
Bye.
Let me break that down a little bit in case it was hard to hear. There's no path going there, so we have to go down here. The first person to say they want to go down the hill is the girls. It is not Bridge Guy. Bridge Guy is not like pressuring them to go down the hill. He's not even not like chasing them or stalking them. He looks like he's just a guy off walking on a day when there's probably a lot of people out there walking because it was a warm late winter day. And then you hear him pass them, and he does a friendly, hey. And they're looking down the hill, and he goes, yeah, down the hill. Which I think I would do, too. If you're walking on out in the woods, and there's two girls looking confused as to where the path goes, and they're pointing and looking around, and you know where the trail is, yeah, down the hill. There it is. And you keep going your merry way. But somehow that, which we've now finally been allowed to see by the powers that be of Delphi, the magical Oz, it's not at all what was presented to us for the last however many years. Bob, what's your reaction to this video now that you've got a chance to see it outside of court and had a chance to like review it more in depth?
Yeah, I was paying attention to you right there, but I sent you a version when I think has better sound.
Okay.
That maybe you want to plug in, where we watched that. It's got significantly better sound. I had some people up the sound.
Okay.
And send it to me. Yeah. You know, when I sat in court, and from what I understand, this is the original, and remember that there exist three versions of this video.
Okay.
Four, if you're counting what they put out to the public, the 3-second clip of just Bridge Guy that was all grainy where you can't make out anybody's face. But this apparently was taken from directly from the extraction of Libby's phone. Mm-hmm. So what we also saw was what they called a enhanced version of it. And then finally, they showed us what they called a stabilized version. Now, when I first saw this, when it was released this week, I could not remember. I'm like, is this, I was hitting everybody up that was in court with me during that trial. I'm like, is this the original? Because when I watched the original in court, and I have all kinds of people saying, Bob said he couldn't see the Bridge Guy. And when you're looking at something that you've been waiting to see for 7 years in a court from 50 feet away on a 55 inch screen, and you're trying to soak in everything. Like when you look at the beginning of that video, where now when you can watch it over and over, you can see that he's behind her, but she's kind of shielding his body initially until there's like Libby pulls back a little bit, and then you can see how far he is behind her. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't see the dude initially. So then I'm kind of like, oh, you're trying to take it all in, and you're like, wow, you know, and then when I finally do see him, I thought he looked to be 10 yards back, maybe 30 feet behind her. And, you know, when I saw that now in full display, I still think he's probably about 10 yards behind her.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you're trying to figure out the concept of this picture that was floating around out on social medias, another snap picture, the one with Abby alone out on the bridge. Okay. Walking towards, if you're facing Abby towards the right side of the tracks, kind of looking down, which you'd have to be to cross those railroad ties. And you don't see anybody behind her.
No.
the whole way. Do you know what picture I'm talking about?
I think so. I think I know.
Yeah, what you're talking about. Just if you Google it right now, you can find it while I'm talking, and you can throw it up. It's like Abby on Monadnock Bridge alone. So at trial, we learned that they could not find that particular picture anywhere in the Snapchat cache of Libby's phone. They couldn't find it anywhere on the extraction that was somehow found on the internet, but we don't know who posted that picture. So when you look at that picture in conjunction with where it appears that she's standing in that picture and how much of the north end is behind her, and you can kind of figure that she's closer to where Libby is than she is to the beginning of the north side of the trestle. So she's not too far from where Libby starts taking the video.
Yeah.
And then you have to try to figure out, well, where the hell does this guy come? This is not the type of bridge that you can run across.
No.
It's a railroad, an old defunct railroad trestle. So it's literally railroad tracks where you have between a 14 and 16 inch gap between railroad ties. Okay. So like you have to veer it. And on top of that, half of these ties are completely deteriorating. Some of them are missing completely. So this is a very treacherous, terrifying walk across this bridge. No one is jogging across it. No one. So it then leads you to the place, well, where is this guy? You know, it appears that she, there it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, there's no... There's no bridge guy on that shot. So right. Yeah, like where does, well, the only other thought I would have on this is number one, it didn't appear on her phone. So that's weird in itself. So did somebody else take this? Is that the question?
Yes.
Basically. Okay. So if somebody else took it, yeah. I mean, who would that be? How would that be? How did the guy get there?
It could have been somebody that had access to her Snap account, how do they get the picture is the $1 million question.
Yeah.
Because what I'm saying, it's not in her Snap cache. I'm talking about the extraction of her phone.
Yeah.
And one of the questions that I have, and I'm going to, like, I'm actually, Stacey Aldridge is going to be on our show next Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the defense expert, the phone forensic expert on the case. And she's going to talk about everything that she testified to. So I'm going to ask her if that means... Does what is in her Snapchat cache, is that the type of thing that you can extract with the use of Cellebrite? Or because the whole point of Snap is that the pictures disappear.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you're sending disappears unless you have it in the setting that it doesn't. And it also gives people the opportunity when you put it out there that they can grab a screen grab of it. And they can save it down to their photos.
Yeah.
So, but my question is if this was taken with Libby's Snap, would Cellebrite be able to extract it even if it had disappeared through the Snapchat application? Yeah. You understand what I'm saying?
Timestamp would be important on this too, like an authentic timestamp from the original.
Any kind of metadata, 100%. Yeah,
because this it could be easily explained that they were playing on the bridge for a while. Bridge guy just hasn't gotten there yet. And they were hanging out there for a little while. And then eventually that other guy is coming this way and they decide to start moving forward because they see somebody coming, you know, that's going to eventually pass them on the bridge. I don't think I'd really want to be next to anybody on that bridge that's going to pass me. So you're going to kind of keep moving.
So in here, if you're looking at, if you're looking behind Abby and you look to the right side of the rail, you can see one of the two platforms.
Yeah.
Okay. Go back there. See that thing that's sticking out? Yep. Right where your little cursor is. Yep. That is one of the platforms. There's two of them. And if you look way, way beyond that to the left, you'll see the other one. Blow it up again.
It's about as big as I can blow it up right there. Let
me pull it so down. You see it. It's almost, you can see that thing sticking out that looks similar to the piece of wood that's sticking out right there.
Yep.
Exactly. Right. You see what I'm talking about? No, you had it. Move the hand up again. Like up
in this area,
Yeah, it's on the left side there.
Yeah, exactly. It's right there. Yeah.
So that is the first platform. So if you're able to look and you can Google an aerial view of the Monon High Bridge, there are those two platforms, and they are at the opposite end of where she is at. You can see how far behind that is of her. So she is not hanging around just playing on that bridge. Mm-hmm. Libby obviously had a lot less fear in terms of crossing that bridge because she beat like when you're hearing about people talking about crossing that bridge, it's like people are like, yeah, but I got down on my hands and knees and crawled across it because it's that scary.
Yeah.
You're like 67 feet above a creek.
Yeah.
When you're over the creek and when you're not over the creek, you're 67 feet above like ground.
On rotting wood.
On rotting wood. So it's a terrifying experience. So like Abby is not sitting chilling, hanging out, like posing for pictures there. She's trying to get across. Mm-hmm. My point is the only thing that makes sense to me is that the killer came past them from the south side of the bridge and then turned around when he got past both girls. Mm-hmm. That he pretended like he was walking by and then at some point hung a Yui and started following them.
Yeah.
And because it doesn't make any sense other way. It just doesn't add up. And if that's the case, I mean, to me, that's pretty exculpatory as to Richard Allen.
Yeah.
Because he was not coming from that side of the bridge. Mm-hmm. Like that side of the bridge, you know, where you'd park to get there is a long distance away from where Allen said he parked and from where the police are saying that he parked, which was the old CPS parking lot.
Yeah.
So like this is at the opposite end of that. Okay. So it doesn't really work for me in terms of it being Allen if they're going to stick with, well, this is where he parked. And, you know, that's where he was waiting. And then he's following him down the bridge. Because where is he in the other picture? That other picture tells the tale. Because what I'm saying is that the amount of time that it would have taken Abby to get to where we see her jog past Libby. Because at that point, she's clearly over where there's peril.
Yeah.
Like, because this track runs, it continues to run just normal tracks once you finish crossing the trestle itself.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, and then as soon as she got like right to the end of it, like anybody, when you're doing something like pretty scary and you kind of get to the very end of it, you kind of like rush your way through it and get the safety, right? I mean, that's a normal thing to do, which is exactly what she did.
Yep.
And, you know, so we know that she's pretty close to that end and there's just not enough time for that guy to make up all that space, all that distance in the time that it would have taken her from where the picture that you just showed to where she gets to safety, to where Libby's filming. So, I mean, for me, it just raises a ton of questions. Obviously everybody on there, you know, that's watching this thing is trying to figure out exactly what's said. You know, you've got that confirmation bias thing where people have said, Oh, that's a gun. But then, you know, like I'm hearing people, I asked like Grok, I'm like, Grok, pretend like you're a court reporter and you're watching this video and can you give me a transcript of what's being said? And Grok's like, I cannot do that. I don't know. I am just a robot. I can read with the transcript. You know, and it's like, so, you know, there's going to be people that are going to be trying to break down exactly what is said, you know, because you hear a gun being racked?
No.
See if you can put up like the video.
I got yours. Let's take a look at it.
Throw it up there. Let's see. I think the sound's significantly better.
Here we go.
See, this is the path. Yeah, the other. There's no path going there, so we have to get down here.
Guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
There's no path going there, so we have to get down here.
Guys.
Bye.
So that video, it looks like it repeats, right? It's not just
right. That like I think my buddy made it like repeat two times. So it's a 43-second video total.
Yeah.
And like I don't hear a gun rack at all.
No.
But in that particular video, I've got another one that I'm going to send you to, that you can check out when we're done. All but, right. In that one, you can hear the rocks crunching.
Yeah.
Under her feet.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more. And, you know, there's this point in time where he asks a question, or she talks about the path two times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the first time she's like, I forget what she says. Here, go back on it. And it's before the second to play it in regular speed.
Let me play the one I have, the original, at regular speed. It is right here. All right, let's take a look.
See, this is the path that we're on.
See, I'm not hearing the rocks crunching on yours either.
I am.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. And that's it. It's just, there's a rock crunching, but they're trying to debate how to get down the thing, down the hill. And then he goes, hey guys, down the hill? Almost like, are you trying to figure out how to get down the hill? I mean, again, I don't get anything out of that where it's like he's trying to pressure them to go down the hill. It just seems like somebody passing by and like, oh yeah, down the hill, you know, path is over there, you know, whatever. It doesn't seem incriminating to me.
And that's the thing where I'm talking about, like in that one portion where she starts talking about the path first, that's where Tony Liggett at trial testified that he claims that he hears, that be a gun.
It's not, that's not in there. I know. I listen. Oh, there's nothing in there that says that.
Right. And what I've heard is she'll say something about the path and there's a pause. And then the question is that Abby who says something or is that Libby finishing what she's saying?
Yeah.
And then she talks about the path again. So I
don't know. I watch this and I see nothing. I don't even know why there's this everybody's stuck on this being the murderer. Like I don't know. Like it's the only piece that they have from the last moments that the girls were alive, but it doesn't mean that the guy in that video is the killer. I that seems like a very far reach that was made very early on that was simply just accepted and nobody really questioned it a whole lot. And I get kind of why the way it was presented to the public as this guy is telling them to go down the hill. He's not. They're talking about how to get down the hill before the guy even gets close enough for them to hear him. They're the ones that want to go down the hill.
So you're saying guys It's just like, hey, like
hey guys,
because they say hi.
Yeah, it seems like just a pleasant. You're just passing somebody on the woods, and you see two girls that look kind of confused, and they're trying to figure out where to get to their trail, which appears to be exactly what's happening. And if you know the trails and you walk around there, and they're, you know, hey guys, they're like looking down there, yeah, down the hill.
I mean, it certainly doesn't sound nefarious.
No, it doesn't.
Like people are like, oh, they sound terrified. I'm like, I'm not
they
hearing.
They don't.
That.
They sound like, hey, oh, the path isn't over here. That I would not, if I knew nothing about this case and somebody showed me that video, I'd be like, and what is what am I watching here? Two girls hiking and a guy. I mean, creepy looking bridge. But
and that's what I'm seeing. Like when it gets out there that law enforcement is saying that they hear her saying, "That be a gun." Like that begins to be the thing that you think you hear.
And I,
and it's like, you know what the brain works. It's like that. Right. Exactly. It's like that Yanny Laurel thing.
Yeah.
Remember that thing like 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Like Allison hears Yanny and I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't hear anything even remotely close. It's clearly Laurel.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just like, I don't know, man.
It's how our brains work.
It's out.
Yeah.
Now that it's out, there's going to be people that know a hell of a lot more about, you know, audio files. They're going to be working to clean that up as much as humanly possible, doing the work that should have been done on this audio by law enforcement over the past 7 years.
I'm going to play with it too. I haven't had a chance to do it yet, but we're going to put it into Audition and really try and massage this thing down. I just don't see where this, other than let's tell the public this, they edited the damn video. They moved the audio to a different place of where it is. And in the original, in the 6 second clip to put down the hill at a very ominous place in the video where it just isn't. That to me is like, why are you doing that? If you're going to release just the little clip of the guy, then just release a little clip of the guy. If you want the part where you hear him saying something, then release the whole damn thing. But then you'd also have to contextually take out the two girls not sounding remotely worried or scared, and them actually being the first ones who are trying to figure out how to get down the hill before the guy even says anything. It's just, they worked it. They completely flipped this video around, presented it in a different way. The public went going, oh gosh, this is horrible. And it's not at all. It's like just editing a promo to make something sound like spookier. You're more intrigued by it. You can edit anything to make things sound worse than they actually are. And that's exactly what appears to have happened in this video.
100%.
I am baffled.
It's like, why aren't they like, why did they elect to only put out
that
3 second clip of just him instead of the whole video?
Well, and you're trying, especially in a case that took years to finally go after anybody and get charges. Wouldn't you be putting out anything you could in its entirety for anybody to take a look at and go, what can we make sense of? But if they put it out just in that little way, that creates a different narrative. And it makes, makes this guy look a hell of a lot more ominous than he actually is. And again, the guy looks like Ron Logan. If you compare the gait and everything to him, he doesn't appear to be Richard Allen at all, as from what you can tell. And again, you can't completely say it's Ron Logan, but if you, we've shown the graphics before side by side, and they're pretty compelling. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me, other than, again, another piece in this case that looks like it's been manipulated for another reason, and I don't know what that reason is, other than
it's just another mystery in this case that's full of them, you know. It's like, and so in you know, in related news, Judge Gull has denied the final two motions,
shocking,
that were filed by the defense, which was the motion to preserve and produce. And then, of course, the motion to reconsider, the motion to correct errors. So that, and as of today, the notice of appeal has been filed, and the clerk has filed the notice of completion of court's records. So the appeal's up and running. It's now officially out of Judge Gull's hands up and until if they're granted a new trial, then in theory, she would be sitting on the judge unless the appellate court says, well, we're going to kick it back, but this time we're going to use a different judge.
Does the appellate court have the authority to do that? Or let me ask you that question. They do? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. If they think that the judge just made some critical errors, I mean, the appellate court could seek to have it tried in front of another judge.
It wouldn't necessarily automatically go back to Gull, and she wouldn't have the opportunity to recuse herself. It would just simply be, we're getting a different judge. It's not your choice anymore.
Well, if the opinion is silent as to like her trying it or her overseeing it again, then she's the judge.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be up to her as to whether or not she's going to do it again.
Sure.
You know,
time window and something like this, now that that's been filed, where does that go?
Well, the next step is the brief. Alan's brief has to be prepared. They have to get the full record, meaning all the exhibits put together, which I'm sure they're working furiously on right now. Mm-hmm. And once that is done, and I'm sure that appellate counsel is already working on their brief. They're working on identifying all the issues. They do that by going through the transcripts of all the hearings and the trial. They identify the issues that they think exist. They put together their brief. That will probably take a few months, 3, 4, 5 months. There are deadlines, but they usually can get extensions. Once they get it done, the response brief is due. And then, you know, after that, there may be a reply brief. But once the court is fully briefed, then they start reading through it, and they'll decide if they want oral arguments or not. And if they do, there'll be a date set for oral arguments. I've heard that in Indiana, like the range is anywhere from 12 to 18 months.
So hopefully he stays alive in jail or in prison for at least 12 to 18 months.
That's the key.
Yeah.
That's the key.
That's
because the appeal goes away if he dies.
Right? Yeah.
Yep.
So messed up. So messed up. If you were listening to this and you want to see the video itself, you can check out our YouTube channel, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and watch everything that we were talking about, and be sure to hit subscribe there or wherever you're listening right now so you don't miss any of the updates on this case, because it's not going away anytime.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Tell you what, every time you think you're getting somewhere in the Delphi murder case, you're finding more evidence and more rabbit holes to go down. You suddenly discover another 20 rabbit holes down that rabbit hole. There are so many things in this case that were not investigated properly. Investigations just stopped. They were turned the other way. They said, we got nothing more here, in spite of loads of evidence. One of the big pieces in this whole story involves a character by the name of Keegan Klein. And we're going to be focusing on him in this episode of the program. And I want to show you something one of you guys recently sent to me. One of our sleuths out there sent me this. And this is, I'm going to show you something from his Facebook page. Let me give you a quick background on Keegan Klein. I'll go into great detail in a moment. But before you see this, he is the guy who was communicating online, the last known person to communicate with Libby German before the murders. How was he communicating with her? Not as a friend. No, as a child predator. Someone who was trying to allegedly lure her to go and meet up the day she was murdered. And where did he want to meet up, allegedly? The Monon High Bridge.
Yeah.
So there's that. But he's not, he's never been charged with anything in this crime. He's been charged with many other crimes involving child pornography, and he's serving 40 years in prison now for that. But he's a key player in all of this, denies being involved in any way, shape, or form, despite being the guy that's trying to lure her to the bridge the day she's murdered. Nothing to see here. And he's also the guy who on his Facebook page posted this. All right, okay. What is this? What is there anything to see here? Well, let's break this down a little bit. Keegan Klein has these alter egos, these fake personalities that he was using to try and lure people to him. Because he's a really disgusting looking human being and a really disgusting person on the inside and the outside. So he has to get behind these fake personas to have anybody have any interest in him whatsoever. So one of these is a music artist. He's claiming that he's in these bands and he's dropping these records and all this stuff. And it's all BS. It's just all completely made up. But on his Facebook page, he posts this. Now, what's significant about this? Well, he drops this on his Facebook page roughly a year after the murders. And you can see the date right up there. Okay, so it's roughly a year. And then the graphic itself. Got his name up there, Keegan Klein, and then there's a rose, a white rose in the middle of the graphic with a black backdrop. And then we see the date 12/27. Now, on the surface, one could go, oh, is that the album drop date? That's what one would think. It also happens to be Libby German's birthday. And the white roses represent innocence, purity. No, Libby German was a little girl. So one could easily think of her that way, especially if you're a child predator and wanting to take that from someone. White rose, the word rose on this graphic. And the other side, it literally says rose, in case you're listening. That's also Liberty's middle name. Liberty Rose German. So there's that. Suspicious, weird. Is it a tribute to this young girl who lost her life about a year before he posted this? Or is this some sort of sadistic look at me, haha, you won't figure me out type way of posting? Because he's kind of an idiot. It's kind of weird. It's kind of creepy. It's really weird and it's really creepy. And we're going to go into the whole story of Keegan Klein here in just a moment. I want to show you one other creepy thing that has been sent to me recently. And you may have seen this before. I may just be playing catch up and have missed some of these things because I don't really go into the Reddits and all of that. This is an image I'm going to show you here. And they want to contextualize it as well. You know, they were saying, the authorities in Delphi were saying, oh, you know, we put those composite sketches out there, but obviously Richard Allen doesn't look like any of them. So who could it be? Well, we could never figure out. We could never figure out who those sketches looked like. Really? Because a lot of other people did. What you see on the screen here, if you're watching us on YouTube and if you're listening to us, please go check out our YouTube channel, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and you can see the video version of all of these, is the half and half composite sketches of what witnesses or who witnesses say they saw out there that day. And it's faces divided. You have one half the composite sketch, the other half an actual photo of some individuals who were alleged to have been seen out there that day. On opposite ends is Keegan Klein. That's Keegan there. That's Keegan there. The middle, Anthony Klein, his dad. Again, none of them have been charged with anything in this case. But you know, if you're looking for somebody that looks like the composite sketches that other hikers said, hey, here's who I saw, you might have a few folks right there because none of them look like Richard Allen. So there's that. Let's get into our story. The last person, the very last person known to have contact with Liberty German before her murder was not Richard Allen. It was Keegan Klein. That fact alone should have made Klein the prime focus of the Delphi murders investigation. It should have led to immediate scrutiny, a deep dive into his digital history, and a race to uncover whether his communication with Liberty was more than just another online interaction. But instead, law enforcement sat on that information, let it collect a little dust, finally age for 3 years, while they chased dead-end leads and ignored the most damning piece of evidence that they had from the very start, a direct link between Keegan Klein and one of the victims. Liberty German wasn't just a random teenager scrolling through social media. She was being groomed. She'd been targeted by a predator hiding behind a fake online persona, a predator who was actively manipulating multiple underage girls at the time, including her. And on February 13th, 2017, the day she and Abby Williams disappeared, that predator's profile was Anthony Schatz, and it was still active. It turns out it was Keegan Klein. Yeah. The name Anthony Schatz. The Anthony part makes me wonder a little, because his dad's name is Anthony. And there have been some transcripts out there that show some interesting accusations that Keegan has made that maybe other people were using that profile as well. Let's be absolutely clear, though. Keegan Klein was not just some guy who happened to know Liberty. He was the last confirmed person to be in contact with her before she was murdered. That alone should have made a massive red flag go up on the part of investigators. That also should have put a spotlight on him immediately, but the police didn't act. Not in 2017, not in 2018, not even 2019. Even though they knew that this guy is catfishing children. Just let him do his thing. By the time they finally got around to interrogating him in 2020, it wasn't even because of Liberty German. It was because of an entirely different child exploitation case. Yeah. They finally get around to this guy, Keegan Klein. Again, nothing to see here. So here's a question that has never been answered. Why did law enforcement ignore the strongest lead they ever had? And that's just one of the many strong leads. There's Ron Logan, too. Bridge guy. But we're not getting into that one on this video. There's too much to unpack about Keegan Klein here. If you want to see the Ron Logan ones, we got them on our channel. Check it out. And while we're at this moment, I want to ask you to press subscribe wherever you're listening to this, or if you're on YouTube, hit the button, hit the bell, hit whatever you need to hit on whatever platform it is so you don't miss any of our coverage on this case, because we will continue to dive through this and wade through this until actual justice is served, because God knows it's not the guy that got locked up. There's no way around it. This wasn't just a mistake. This was a failure to investigate logic. A known predator, already under scrutiny for his involvement in online exploitation, had direct access to one of the victims just before she was murdered. And yet, he was treated as an afterthought. Meanwhile, Richard Allen, a man who had no digital connection to the victims at all, was charged and convicted. And now, with Allen locked up, Keegan Klein is slipped into the background of this case again, and if his role into it no longer matters, well, I guess that may be what some think, but I think we need to bring back a little light here, get the spotlight out, get the big flashlight out, and go, I think we needed to look back over here, guys, because I don't know how you didn't do it in the first place. Unless, of course, nobody wants to admit they're wrong, nobody wants to admit they haven't figured anything out, or we're protecting somebody. I don't think you're protecting Keegan Klein. His name never should have left the conversation in the first place. So let's talk about what police actually knew. From the moment Liberty's phone was examined in 2017, investigators saw it. The Anthony Schatz profile, actively messaging her. The account had been used to flirt, manipulate, and engage with young girls, convincing them to send explicit photos. This isn't speculation. Klein admitted to creating the account. He admitted to using stolen images of a male model to catfish minors because, I mean, look at him. Do you think that's going to catfish anybody? You think it's even going to get a normal human being? Gee, you don't look like a child predator at all. He admitted that his goal was to lure girls into trusting him so he could get exactly what he wanted. And Liberty was one of his targets. This wasn't a vague connection. It wasn't just a name in a chat log. This was an active online predator who had direct access to one of the victims at the exact time she went missing. And yet, despite having all of this evidence in their hands, law enforcement took 3 years before they even questioned Klein about Delphi. What exactly were they waiting for? The truth is, it is very hard to understand how police justified ignoring this lead. And now someone say, well, they did ignore it. They did look in. Yeah, they did. They did eventually look into him. And then what? I don't know. If you're the one that's catfishing one of the girls who dies and you talk about going and meeting her the day she dies at the place she dies, I would think that might be probable cause for an arrest. Just saying. It wasn't just one red flag, it was a flashing neon sign, and yet no immediate action was taken. No arrest, no raid of Klein's home, no deep dive into his digital records, until 2020, when an entirely different case forced them to finally act. And when they finally got around to questioning him about Liberty, he lied. Surprise. Over and over, Klein denied knowing anything. He claimed he didn't remember their conversation. He said he blocked her because she was annoying. You know, those annoying girls that are underage that you're catfishing. They're just annoying. I just want to block them. I don't want to prey on them like I'm actively doing right now. He called the idea that they were supposed to meet up a total lie, even though the chat logs suggest otherwise. And the police let him walk out of that room without a single charge related to Delphi. Took him at his word. For 3 years, law enforcement had ignored Keegan Klein. And when they finally sat him down and confronted him with fact, with truth, with chat logs, and he says, "That it's not real. It's a lie." Or whatever BS spewed out of his mouth. They still didn't do anything about it. To protect and serve over there in Delphi, right? He got a great force. Instead, they turned their attention to someone else, a man with no digital footprint in Liberty's life at all. A man who wasn't even on their radar for the first 5 years of the investigation. A man who actually raised his hand at the beginning of this when the girls they found dead and they said, "Who was out here hiking today? Please call us with any information you have, with anything that you know. What did you see? Even if you think it's just completely benign, just tell us what was your experience like out there that day." And you know who raised his hand? Richard Allen. He said, "Yeah, I'm a dad. I'm a father. I work over here at CVS. A lot of people know me. How can I help?" You know, like child killers do. They always raise their hand and go, "Hey, I was there that day." Somehow to Delphi, that was, "Oh, this must be the guy." Oh, wait, that took them another 6 years when they ran out of other leads. Or they just stopped pursuing real ones or pretended that they didn't exist. Then they went after Richard Allen and convicted him with little to no evidence. A man whose only physical connection to the crime scene was a single bullet. And by the way, the crime was not committed with a bullet. There's no evidence that a gun was even shown to the girls. There's nothing involving a gun in this case. But they found a single bullet on the trampled crime scene that they let all these people go through. All these people trampling through, officers, volunteers, many people with guns. So after 40 to 60 or more people wander through this crime scene, somebody finds a bullet on the ground, an unspent bullet. Who might that belong to? I don't know, any of the 40, 50, 60 or more people who've been trampling through this scene the last 4 days? Maybe we should check all them. Oh, no, no, no. 6 years later, we're going to go see if Rick Allen has a gun that maybe would fit this bullet. A very common bullet, by the way, that almost anyone would have if they're a regular gun owner. And they go, look, this bullet fits your gun. Can't really prove it. We got this guy who says it might look like it kind of has a marking, even though it's unspent. And the science of this is pretty much bunk. It must be his, because we found that single bullet there, and he has a gun that it could go into. That means it's him. Now, keep in mind, this is a gun-loving community, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. All I'm saying is, if this is, you're going to connect this guy and say this is your guy because of a single bullet, I think you probably would be lining up nearly half of your town if we're going to match bullets here. Or just, again, going back to all the people who trampled through the scene that have guns, where there likely could have been a bullet dropped. Is a CVS guy who went out for a walk, didn't have his gun with him. Rick Allen was just out for a walk, and then he raises his hand and said, how can I help? But that bullet must be his, so that automatically means he must have killed these girls. Yes, this is their logic, and if you think I'm making that up, dig into this case. This is why we are still talking about it, because they convicted him, and he's in prison now for the next 130 years. Again, he's a dad, he was a pharmacy tech, he was a husband, no criminal history, nothing, nada. No weird search history, no patterns of behavior that would indicate maybe there's some sort of interest in kids or killing or whatever. Nothing. Just a bullet on the ground that fit a gun he owned. So you better be careful if you ever drop a bullet anywhere, because any crimes nearby, near Delphi, you're going to get pinned for it. Or you won't. So here we are, years later, still left with the same unanswered questions. Why was Keegan Klein allowed to slip through the cracks? Because until we have an answer to that, this case is not solved. And it never will be. Keegan Klein wasn't just another suspect in the Delphi murders investigation. He was the only person with a verifiable digital connection to Liberty German before she was killed. He wasn't some mystery figure who vanished into the ether after the crime. He was right there, behind a fake online persona, actively grooming underage girls and talking to Liberty up until the day she disappeared and denying it under the profile Anthony Schatz. Wasn't some throwaway account either. It was a carefully constructed trap designed to lure young, vulnerable girls in. Klein stole photos of a male model, sometimes with sharp features, a perfect jawline, the kind of guy who could pass as an Instagram influencer. He built a fake identity around it, an online persona meant to gain trust, build connections, and exploit children. And for years, that's exactly what he did. When police finally searched Klein's electronic devices in 2020, what they found was horrific. Thousands of explicit images and videos of minors. Thousands of chats between Klein and underage girls. It wasn't just one or two victims. It was a pattern, a system he had perfected. And right there, among all those digital horrors, was Liberty German. She'd been talking to Anthony Schatz, not just once, not just in passing. She was actively communicating with Klein's fake account the day before she was murdered. And that was not speculation. That wasn't theory. That was fact. Police knew that Liberty had been speaking to this account. They had the chat logs. They could see the messages. They knew that this was more than some casual conversation. And the most damning detail, the chat logs suggested that Liberty and Anthony Schatz had planned to meet up. We're not talking about vague, half-joking exchange. We're talking about something serious enough to be flagged in the investigation. Something that made police believe that Liberty may have been lured to the bridge that day under false pretenses. Think about that for a second. A known predator actively communicating with Liberty German, a meeting may have been planned, And instead of going after that lead immediately, law enforcement sat on this information for years. It was there, or if there was ever a moment where the Delphi investigation completely fell apart, this was it. Because digital records don't lie. There was no reason to hesitate, no reason for police to question whether this was relevant. The second they saw Liberty German's name in the chat logs, the second they saw messages between her and Anthony Schatz leading up to the day she vanished, Keegan Klein should have been the number one priority. But he wasn't. Instead of treating this as a massive lead as it was, police buried it. They never made a public statement about it in 2017. They never put out warnings about the Anthony Schatz profile to see if other victims might come forward. They never once told the public that they were actively investigating a known child predator who had been talking to Liberty the day before she was murdered. For 3 years, nothing happened. Klein remained free. His Anthony Schatz account was never linked to the case publicly. The investigation dragged on, cycling through suspects, chasing tips that led nowhere. Unless, of course, you're talking about Ron Logan, but again, that's for another story. While the one person actually connected to Liberty was left untouched, and all the while Klein kept up his act, he kept using Anthony Schatz to groom more girls. He continued to build trust with underage victims under the same fake persona, pretending to be someone he wasn't. He wasn't hiding. He was right there, doing exactly what he had been doing when he talked to Liberty. It wasn't until 2020, when Klein was finally arrested for child exploitation, that law enforcement even started to acknowledge his connection to the Delphi case. But by then, it was too late. They'd wasted years. And that's why this case still doesn't make sense now. If law enforcement truly believed they had that Keegan Klein had nothing to do with the murders, then why did they hide the fact that he was talking to one of the victims? If they truly thought Anthony Schatz was irrelevant, then why did they wait so long to publicly acknowledge it? And if they did suspect that Klein played a role, then why was he never charged with anything related to the Delphi case? None of this adds up. What we do know is this. The strongest lead in the Delphi murders case was ignored for years, and Liberty German was being manipulated by a known predator. She was communicating with him directly, and police had this evidence from the start. And yet, despite this, Keegan Klein still wasn't the one sitting in the defendant's chair in 2024. And that is a failure that cannot be ignored. By 2017, police had everything they needed to at least treat Keegan Klein as a person of interest. In the Delphi murders, Liberty German's phone gave them the biggest lead in the entire investigation. Her active conversations with Anthony Schatz's account leading up to the day she was killed, the fact that she had been talking to his fake profile should have launched an immediate deep dive into the person behind it. But that did not happen. Instead, law enforcement sat on the information for 3 years. And in those 3 years, Keegan Klein was left alone. There were no raids on his home, no early morning knocks on the door, no pressure to explain why his fake account was the last known digital contact with one of the victims. While the police spun their wheels chasing dead-end leads, Klein lived his life like nothing had happened. This wasn't a case of limited technology or difficult trail to follow. The second police pulled Liberty's phone records, they had his profile name. From there, it would have taken not much to trace that account back to its creator, especially considering that Klein wasn't some master criminal hiding behind his tracks. He had been running the same scams and exploiting girls online for years. They should have found him immediately. Instead, investigators chased vague descriptions of possible suspects, sifted through thousands of tips, and wasted time on people with no actual connection to the victims. Remember, they also had the sketch. Again, this doesn't look like anybody. That's no one. There's no one to be seen there. That doesn't match a description. Okay. Meanwhile, Klein continued using Anthony Schatz to target more girls, manipulate them, and collect explicit images, all while law enforcement ignored the most crucial digital trail sitting directly in front of them. He had 3 more years to talk to more victims, free to keep running the same schemes that he had used on Liberty German, free because police had failed to act on the most obvious suspect they had. When they finally did show up at his door in August of 2020, it wasn't because they had finally put two and two together about the Delphi murders. It was because something else entirely. The FBI wasn't raiding Klein's home because they had uncovered new evidence linking him to Liberty's disappearance. They were there because of a separate child exploitation case. Authorities had been tracking a massive network of online predators, and Klein's name just happened to surface as one of the worst offenders. Surprise! When they executed the warrant, what they found was beyond disturbing. Klein's devices contained over 100,000 images and videos of child pornography, one of the largest collections ever uncovered in the state up to that time. His chat showed those years of grooming, manipulation, and coercion. He had dozens, if not hundreds, of victims. And yet somehow, even with that mountain of evidence, law enforcement still hadn't prioritized his connection in Delphi. It was only after his arrest that someone finally decided to ask some questions. Hey, this guy, he was talking to Liberty German right before she was killed. Should we look at that? 3 years. 3 years of evidence sitting untouched. 3 years. And what else did he do in those 3 years that we don't even know about, I guess, is another big question. When they finally did bring him to questioning about Delphi, he just denied everything. Despite his denials being in direct contradiction of the physical evidence they had in front of them, he claimed he didn't remember his conversations with Liberty, conveniently. Said he blocked her because she was annoying. No connection. And because police had wasted so much time, they had no way to prove otherwise. By August of 2020, whatever physical evidence might have connected Klein to the crime scene was long gone. Any electronic evidence that could have tied him to the murders had either been wiped or was now buried under years of new digital activity. The trail was kind of cold, despite it being a burning inferno right after that little cold snap there. You just got to get through it. And that was law enforcement's fault. They had the lead, they had the name, they had the evidence, and they did nothing with it. Remember, I got to say here, Klein's never been charged with anything related to the Delphi murders. So, you know, innocent in the eyes of the law. Keegan Klein was simply arrested for child exploitation, simply, and possession of child pornography. And just like that, the biggest mistake of the investigation was complete. Klein should have been the focus from the very beginning. Instead, he was left untouched for 3 years. By the time police finally got around to questioning him, it was too late to fix their mistake. And yet, they went on. They went on acting as if, did we miss something? Nah, we're all good. They put the evidence in front of him, showed him the digital records, proving that his fake profile was still in use, still messaging, still engaging with underage girls, possibly even Liberty right before she vanished. And Klein had no explanation for this. He didn't even try to offer one. Instead, he just denied everything. Said he didn't remember the chats. He blamed someone else for using his phone. He called the idea that he was supposed to meet up with Liberty a total lie, despite police having chat logs suggesting otherwise. It was a masterclass in dodging accountability, and somehow the police just let him do it. At no point during the interrogation did Klein offer a single believable reason for why his account was still active on the day of Liberty's disappearance. He had no way to explain why he had continued using Anthony shots, even after he claimed to have blocked her. He had no answer for why chat records suggested a potential meetup. And yet, instead of pressing him harder, instead of calling out his inconsistencies, instead of treating him like the prime suspect he should have been, police backed off. They had him cornered with digital evidence, and they let him control the conversation. They should have dug deeper, demanded real answers, pushed him until he cracked. Instead, they let him wiggle his little way through. I don't know how he'd really get out of anything physically, but, you know, Crisco. At the end of the interrogation, Klein walked out of that room without a single charge related to the Delphi murders. Again, 3 years of sitting on the biggest lead in the case. They finally confront him. They let him walk away. And in doing so, they gave Keegan Klein exactly what he wanted. By September of 2022, Keegan Klein had been sitting in an Indiana jail cell for over 2 years, convicted of child exploitation and awaiting sentencing. The Delphi murders investigation, now 5 years old, had seemingly moved past him. The public focus had shifted, and yet law enforcement wasn't done with him just yet. That month, without warning, investigators descended on the Wabash River near Klein's home in Peru, Indiana. I'm sorry. Anyway, this wasn't just a casual search. This was a massive operation. Boats, divers, excavation teams, lots of people combing through the riverbed in what was clearly a hunt for something important. And yet no one ever explained what that something was. For 2 weeks, the search continued. Authorities spent countless hours scouring the river, sifting through debris, dredging up whatever they could find. News helicopters hovered overhead. The public speculated. Then, just as quickly as it started, it was over. And nothing was ever said about it again. What were they looking for? That's a question that still has no answer, because if Keegan Klein had never been considered a serious suspect in the Delphi murders, if law enforcement truly believed he had nothing to do with it, then why, after all this time, were they suddenly searching near his home for what appeared to be crucial evidence? The timing alone raises even more questions. For years, investigators had ignored Klein's connection to Liberty German. They let him slide through the fingers of investigators. Yet in 2022, they were suddenly digging through a riverbed for something he might have hidden? This doesn't seem to add up. If the search was unrelated to Delphi, then why didn't law enforcement make that clear? Why didn't they tell the public what they were looking for? At least by now. They had never been shy about releasing updates in the case before, but now when it came to searching an area connected to Keegan Klein, they were silent. If the search was connected to Delphi, then that's an even bigger problem, because if investigators were, in fact, searching for a weapon, a phone, or another piece of physical evidence related to the murders, then it means they had serious doubts about the person they were about to arrest. Keep in mind, if somebody threw a phone, a weapon, a knife, a box cutter in that river, well, you know, if you know anything about the Midwest, you get some weather every year. And we're talking many summers and winters having gone through probably quite a bit of flooding on and off in that very river. You're probably not going to find anything out there that many years later. Good try, though. Maybe you should have thought of that when you looked at her phone and found this guy on it. And then you could trace that back to him being in your town and maybe look at the riverbed right away. I don't know. That's just me. I'm not an investigator. I just talk about this stuff. I think most people would probably run to that conclusion. It's even like below Nancy Drew level. 1 month later, in October of 2022, Richard Allen was charged with the Delphi murders. You know, because they didn't find that box cutter 5-6 years after the murders took place. Surprise. We got to get somebody here. Otherwise, we're going to look like a bunch of buffoons. Yeah, you kind of are. And just like that, the search of the Wabash River was never mentioned again. Whatever they were looking for, whatever they may or may not have found, it was seemingly wiped from the investigation the moment Allen walked into custody. Literally, you know, walked into custody. Klein's name was pushed aside. His connection to Liberty was no longer considered relevant, and the police acted as if the search had never happened at all. Nothing to see here. If Klein was never a suspect, then what was this search about? And if he was a suspect, why was he allowed to fade into the background the moment police found someone else to charge? The fact that this search even happened proves one thing. Law enforcement was still unsure about the case, even 5 years later. And the fact that they buried it just as quickly proves something else. They didn't want the public to know just what the public to know just how much they had second-guessed themselves. That's a bad look.
Even though it's taken all these years and we've really kind of have a lot of suspects here that seem to be possibly involved, maybe even together. But again, nothing to see here. The Wabash River search should have led to more questions, more answers, and more investigations. Instead, it led to Richard Allen's arrest. And Keegan Klein was quietly erased from the story. By the time Richard Allen's trial began in October of 24, the narrative of the Delphi murders had been set in stone. The prosecution walked into the courtroom ready to close the case, painting Allen as the man responsible for the deaths of Abby Williams and Liberty German. They had their timeline. They had their evidence. They had a jury that had been primed to believe that they had the right guy. And yet there was one name missing from the prosecution's case. That name would be Keegan Klein, the man who had been directly communicating with Liberty German before her death, the man whose chat logs suggested a possible meeting with her, the man who had been running a massive online exploitation scheme preying on underage girls, including Liberty, through a fake persona. The jury didn't hear a word of that. Nada. It's like it never even happened. It has nothing to do with the case. Somehow Klein's name was never mentioned by the prosecution. Somehow. The state's entire argument revolved around Richard Allen, the man who had no known digital connection to Liberty or Abby, a man whose only physical tie to the crime scene was that single bullet, a man who, for 5 years, had been completely off the radar of this investigation. That single bullet, by the way, also, again, I gotta stress, never truly connected him to the crime scene. Someone said, "This must belong to you." He says, "No, it doesn't." Prove it. And they really couldn't prove it. So just put yourself in that situation for a second. This must belong to you. No, that's not mine. Well, there's writing on this pad. Don't you write on pads? Well, yes, yeah, I do write on notepads. Well, then it's yours. It must be yours. Case closed. That's essentially what happened. It makes sense in Delphi, I guess. Allen's defense team saw the problem here. They saw the gaps. They saw the ignored evidence. They saw how law enforcement had spent years chasing the wrong people while sitting on real digital proof that Liberty had been talking to a predator before she died. And they made a move that should have changed everything. They called Keegan Klein as a witness. At first, it seemed like the trial was about to take a major turn. Klein, who had spent years evading real scrutiny in this case, was finally going to be able to finally going to be forced to speak under oath, finally going to be confronted with his shifting stories, his digital footprint, and his role in Liberty's final hours. The court even ordered him to be transported from prison to testify. But then, as everything goes in Delphi, nothing happened. Klein was on the witness list, but he never took the stand. No testimony, no cross-examination, no moment of reckoning. Just not like he's even part of this. And no one ever explained why. There's a few possibilities, none of them good. First, the judge may have placed restrictions on what Klein could say. And if the defense wanted to use him to question the integrity of the police investigation, but the court limited how much of that could be brought up, then calling him might have been pointless. And if you know anything about Judge Gall, she doesn't like any fingers pointed in a direction that she doesn't think that they should be going. You know, really impartial like that. The second, the prosecution may have cut a deal with Klein to keep him quiet. If there was any risk that he would say something that could shift suspicion back onto himself, or worse, reveal how badly law enforcement handled their investigation, they may have found a way to ensure he never spoke in front of a jury. Third, the defense may have realized Klein was too unpredictable to be useful. He'd already proven in multiple interrogations that he could dodge questions with ease, that he could twist the truth just enough to cast doubt without actually incriminating himself. And if the defense believed putting him on the stand would cause more confusion than clarity, then they may have decided it wasn't worth the risk. But no matter the reason, the outcome was the same. The jury never got to hear from the one man who was actively in contact with Liberty German before she was murdered. Instead, they were told to focus on Richard Allen. And when the verdict finally came down, it was Allen, not Klein, who was convicted
of the Delphi murders. And just like that, Klein once again slipped out of the spotlight. Once again, he avoided the scrutiny he should have faced from the very beginning. And once again, law enforcement got to pretend that his role in the case didn't matter. But it does, because no matter how many times they try to erase his name from the story, Keegan Klein remains the biggest unanswered question in the Delphi murders. Keegan Klein has never been charged in the Delphi murders, nor for conspiracy, not for accessory, not for obstruction, not for anything. Despite the mountain of digital evidence linking him to Liberty German, despite chat logs suggesting of a planned meeting, despite his own admission that he was behind the Anthony Schatz profile, he has never once been officially accused of playing a role in the murders. Instead, Richard Allen, a man with no known digital connection to Liberty or Abby, was convicted and sent to prison for the crime for the rest of his life. And if that doesn't sit right with you, it shouldn't. Because when you compare the case built against both men, it's Klein, not Allen, who had the stronger circumstantial evidence against him. From the very beginning, law enforcement had concrete proof that Klein had been in contact with Liberty. He wasn't a vague suspect with no ties to victims. He wasn't a name pulled off of a police tip line. He was actively messaging one of the girls before she was murdered. There were no text messages, no social media conversations, no digital evidence at all linking Richard Allen to Liberty German. There were chat logs, metadata, and documented pattern of predatory behavior connecting Keegan Klein to Liberty German, though. Yet Allen was charged, Klein wasn't. So how does that happen? How does a case like this get built around a man who wasn't talking to the victims, while a man who was talking to the victims is left completely out of the equation? It's simple. Law enforcement needed an easy conviction. They needed to find a suspect that they could put in front of a jury, someone whose name wasn't tangled up in years of police failures and ignored evidence. Someone who wouldn't bring attention to the mistakes they made in the early years of the investigation. Keegan Klein, too complicated. And it makes us look really, really dumb. His involvement raised too many questions. His presence in the case would have forced police to explain why they ignored the chat logs for years. It would have forced them to admit that they had failed. One of the biggest leads in examining the biggest lead in the case in 2017 and did nothing with it. Instead, they built a case around Richard Allen. And the biggest sign that they knew their case was wrong, the Wabash River search. Because if law enforcement was so certain that Allen was their guy, why just weeks before his arrest were they still digging near Keegan Klein's home for possible murder evidence? If the case against Allen was airtight, why did they suddenly need to search a river 5 years after the fact looking for something they wouldn't even disclose to the public? The answer's obvious. They had doubts. They had many doubts. And instead of following those doubts, instead of stepping back and reconsidering the path they were on, what did they do? They charged Allen anyway, because that was the easier thing to do, because that gave them an answer, whether it was right or not. And because charging Keegan Klein would have meant admitting that they had let him kind of away with this for years. So here we are, one man convicted, one man forgotten, and a case that still doesn't feel solved. Richard Allen has been convicted, the case, at least in the eyes of law enforcement. But is it really? Because as it stands right now, as it stands at this moment, Keegan Klein is still sitting in prison, not for the Delphi murders, not for anything related to Liberty German, but for child exploitation charges completely unrelated to this case. And if the prison food doesn't kill him first, he will get out. And that should bother everyone. Keegan Klein wasn't some random figure in this investigation. He wasn't the man police discovered years later through new forensic evidence. He was there from the very beginning, his fake persona luring in underage girls, his digital footprint showing direct communication with Liberty. His name should have never left the list of prime suspects. But instead of treating him like the obvious lead he was, police chose to ignore, delay, and ultimately push him out of the picture altogether. He still denies any involvement to this day. He's never been charged with anything connected to the murders, never been forced to answer why his fake account was still active the day Liberty vanished. Or he was, but he doesn't remember. Or he doesn't know. Or I don't think so. Or that's a lie. Those are his answers. And they were just accepted. Never been held accountable for his role leading up to this and leading her into an online trap, one that may have ultimately led to murder. But by who? Maybe that's one of the biggest questions still to this day and one of the biggest failures of all of this, because here's what we still don't know. What did police find in the Wabash River, and why did they go there when they spent weeks searching near Klein's home in 2022? Why was Klein ordered to be transported to testify at Richard Allen's trial only to never take the stand? Will he ever be charged for involvement with Liberty German? Have to walk back Richard Allen's conviction before that. Did law enforcement let the real killer walk free in favor of an easier target? I am not saying Keegan Klein is the killer. I'm saying he certainly has more information. They would say there's no coincidences. Well, this isn't a coincidence. This is just blaringly obvious evidence directly in front of you. There's no scenario where Keegan Klein should have been ignored as completely as he was. The evidence against him was right there from the beginning, and yet police chose a different path, one that conveniently kept the focus away from their biggest investigative mistake. And until those questions are answered, this case will never be truly solved. Because one thing remains abundantly clear. The Delphi police have never explained why they ignored the strongest lead they ever had. And that's just one piece of this story. And believe it or not, not a very big piece, but a very key piece if you're trying to really understand the whole thing and try to find that real piece of evidence that does connect someone to this in a real tangible way. This is a pretty strong one in terms of digital footprint. There's a lot in this case. You can find it all over our channel. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're watching us or listening to us right now so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage on this case. It is not going to go away. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for listening.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. Once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In The News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.